It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And you might say that it sounds not quite like usual because Adam got kind of called out of town. So America's favorite. What are you, soccer dadding this week? Or
I am soccer dad again.
Okay. Sometimes he kind of loses track of things and winds up at some kind of a lacrosse game or something, but we know that soccer's the real thing. But anyway, connection sounds good, and we're raring to go. So I say, let's get on into it. But first, I want to thank everybody who's listening. If you're a long-term listener, great. We appreciate it. We'll do this so long as you guys are out there, if we can handle it. And I think that's a pretty sound bet. And if you're new to the show, whether you've stumbled on it or somebody told you about it, or you left your radio on, whatever, try to listen for the full hour. We talk about all kinds of fun things. There's literally no one out there who's not affected by our topics, because there's no one that isn't affected by money, and hardly anyone that isn't affected by stupidity. That would be other people's stupidity, of course. And a lot of that is floating around on a daily basis, and we'd like to know what it's going to mean to us as investors and planners and so on. So if you all have a topic you want to cover about money or politics, or you know, they're interrelated, or just news of the day, questions, things you don't know, good news like inheriting things, or, you know, buying and selling houses, all kinds of stuff to talk about because it's such a broad topic. But we will discuss what we want to talk about until you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and we will put you on air immediately. Now, if people are reluctant to go on air and risk people knowing them or whatever, you can always email us at info@vanweefinancial.com. That's V-A-N-W-I-E financial.com. We were reminded to spell it because it is a bit of an odd name, and we have been carrying it with us so long it kind of sounds natural, but it isn't to everybody. Anyway, we had a what I would call, I'm trying to come up with the right word every week, another boring week in the market as far as I'm concerned. I'll let Adam expound on that a bit.
Yeah, I don't know if boring is the right word. It was didn't change very much over the course of the week, but we're well into earnings season right now, and much like the stock market lately, earnings season has gone okay. It's not great, it's not terrible, it's just kind of somewhere in the middle. But it sure beats last year when the earnings seasons were going okay and the stock market was terrible.
So yeah, isn't that the truth?
I'll take this over that any day. The other thing that's kind of hanging out there right now is that it's almost impossible to find an economic indicator that's trending in the right direction. You may find some one-off prints that are decent, but if you look at the overall trends, it's not pretty. I want to talk a little bit more about that later on, but it's just not looking great right now. The market was down for the course of the week, but the losses were really modest. We even ended on a high note on Friday. The market had a little gain, and that was nice to see on Friday afternoon. I always like to see not a big sell-off going into a weekend. And we saw all three major indexes, they were off less than 0.5%. So this week felt more like consolidation than a real move in either direction. As would be expected in a near flat week, there were some winners and some losers if you look at the various sectors within the S&P. Energy and communication services both struggled. They lost 2.6%. However, on the flip side, consumer staples was up 1.9%, and financials and utilities were both up over 1%. So not a huge disparity, but definitely some differences amongst the sectors. International stocks were also mixed. Brazil was the big loser. They were down 5.7%. China was down 2%. France and Japan on the other side were up 1%. I want to talk a little bit about Brazil's loss, because it was actually due to something that that the U.S. is not immune to entirely, but their new leftist president criticized the hawkish stance of their central bank. And he went so far as to say that the central bank should, quote unquote, pay the price for the 13.75% interest rate. The new president is claiming that his social spending plan will bypass the constitutional spending cap will create an environment that will lead to lowering rates. However, one small problem with this, he has delayed his announcement about what's actually in the plan, so nobody knows, and he says now it's coming out in April. So he's saying that, don't worry, I got this. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but you need to stop raising rates, and basically threaten them. So what could possibly go wrong? It just seems like a really good setup for Brazil, hence the 6% sell-off. If I was a Brazilian with any money at all, I would probably already be living in Miami. Commodities were dragged down again this week, but for once it was not by natural gas. The natural gas actually gained 4.6%. It's still down over 50% this year. But it was oil's turn to fall this week. It lost 5.4%. Gold and silver posted modest losses. Bonds were down across the board this week, in spite of interest rates actually falling slightly, which was kind of odd. The bond market is up just 3% year to date, as interest rates really haven't had any meaningful movement yet. I suspect towards the end of the year, we may see interest rates come down a bit, and maybe you'll see the bond market tick up a bit more. I mentioned earnings season earlier, and I wanted to do a bit more dive into the details. We've seen 120 companies report, and the earnings beat rate currently stands at 67%, while the revenue rate stands at just 58%. Five companies have raised guidance, while 11 have lowered guidance. And the results, I would call that very mediocre. It's a small sample size, but it's not terrible. It's not great. Kind of like the market this week. Next week, we see a bunch of mega cap stocks report earnings. That should move the market a bit more. We could see some increased volatility. And the next week, we're going to see a ton of companies report, 558 to be exact. And that should give us a much clearer picture of the overall earnings situation. I probably have time to talk about economic data. It was not good, as I mentioned. One that rarely talk about is the Conference Board's Index of Leading Indicators. On a year-over-year basis, this index is now down 7.8%. That's the lowest level since the COVID crash, and before that, the Great Recession. Not to mention, every time this indicator has dropped below 5% or more on a year-over-year basis, the economy has already been in a recession. So really leads to the question, are we in a recession right now? Could be.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been very confusing. In fact, we've been talking about it with virtually everyone who comes into the office. I've never seen a more confusing time when we're trying to blend the two concepts of theory and reality. And we'll get into that right after the break, along with the trivia question. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Well, we're going to do a market-based look at a trivia question today. And as usual, we have a point. And it's kind of an interesting thing. You've all heard, if you listen to anybody, whether it's us or any other people, talking heads anywhere, that one of the things that we look for in as the market changes, either up or down, we look at volume. And the daily volume is supposedly, at least, an affirming measure, I guess. So we would be likely to say something like, The S&P 500 rose today on outstanding volume. That's sort of a confirming indicator that there's a lot of optimism out there. Well, somebody took a little bit different look at volume, And what they came up with today has been worked into our trivia question. So most of you know about the exchange-traded fund SPY that just mimics the S&P 500. You can't buy an index, but you can buy a share of an ETF that is the exact image of that index. So we're working on the SPY today. Since 1996, SPY has gained a cumulative 557%. Pretty cool. But if you were to only hold SPY on days with below average volume, it would be up 36,438%. And what if you only held the SPY on days with above average volume? What percent would it change? In what direction would it change? And that is something that you're probably not going to get it the first couple of times. So put your thinking hats on out there, people, and we'll see what happens. Now, of course, everybody knows you can't do that because you don't know at 9:30 in the morning when the first share is traded what the outlook is going to be for volume on the market. So it's purely hypothetical, but it's very, very interesting. And we'll tell you why before the show ends today. All right, Adam, I'm back to wrapping up the market. Anything that stuck out in particular? I think we need to talk about the Fed outlook some more.
Just two things that I wanted to mention before we talk about anything Fed-related. I was talking about the Conference Board's Index of Leading Indicators and how it was down 7.8% year-over-year. Not a great sign. It is also now down 12 months in a row. There has only been two other times where it was down more than that. One was the 22 months in the early 70s, which I found very ironic considering how many people are comparing these times to the early 70s. And the other one was the 24 months of the Great Recession. So not a great sign with that statistic. Something to keep an eye on for sure. And then right now, even the employment reports are starting to look a little shaky. Initial claims came in at 245,000. That was an increase of 5,000 over last week and really, really trending towards the 250,000 number that can signal trouble. That trend over 250 is also indicative of being in a recession. It's a similar story on continuing claims, which has risen by 576,000 over the last 7 months, and that trend pretty much mirrors all the pre-recession trend in almost all of the last recession. So everything's really sort of signaling that we are in or heading into some sort of recession.
Yeah, it's hard to argue otherwise at this point. And then, of course, you can sit back and look at some things and say, well, why are there so many jobs open? Why are people easily able to get a job if they're laid off? And that does not compute.
Why are bars and restaurants packed?
Yeah,
why are
airplanes
full? There's so many interesting things about this current time. And I've been calling it the COVID rebound. It's really been the last 3 years have just thrown a real wrench into the normal patterns of economic indicators that we're used to. Nothing is happening like it should. It's been a real difficult time to figure out.
Now, in all that is one piece of civilized news, and that is that the interest rate, which I believe will go up one more time on May 3rd. Are you feeling that way, Adam?
Yeah, right now the CME Fed Watch tool is putting the odds at somewhere north of 84%. Mm-hmm. So that's almost a lock that they're going to raise one more time.
Yeah, there have been a lot of individual Fed board members saying as much as that lately, too. Like that magic number that comes next starts with a 5. And most of the board members were absolutely adamant that this cycle of hiking rates would wind up something north of 5. So once we get there, then all bets are off for a little while. But I think they'll do it. I thoroughly believe that it's a mistake. But the Fed has a reputation to maintain for always getting it wrong.
That's true. I don't really see the clear need for this last one. It feels excessive, and five is a completely arbitrary number. That was just picked out of a hat. So I don't understand, when you're seeing all the leading indicators pointing the wrong direction, why throw fuel on that fire? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, now here's something that we have to factor in too. You mentioned layoffs, and they are below that magic number still. At least they're being reported below the magic 250 number. I don't trust anything that I'm hearing anymore. I feel like getting numbers out of D.C. is about the same as getting them out of Beijing. But we got to go. Everybody plays in the same sandbox here, so we got to go with what they tell us. But there is an interesting little breakdown in there. Those people who are losing their job in large numbers right now, the biggest group of those is the 200,000 a year and up earners. Now, when you start taking those people out of the earnings, day-to-day earnings, you are going to start seeing people not buy things, not buying luxury goods especially, and that has been reflected in some of the data on the consumer goods. There is a real strong trend to consumer staples. And again, the market's always looking ahead of where we are today. And if they're thinking they're better off to invest in consumer staples than consumer discretionary, that means they're looking at times that aren't quite as good as things used to be. And it seems to me that that ought to be taken into account by the Fed, if they have half the brains they pretend to have. And we'll see. It's not something that hits the data immediately when these people get laid off. It takes a couple of cycles to work that in, that all of a sudden we're not having these free spending good time Charlies that are making a bunch of money for doing very little. And I get concerned when I see things like that. We're mixing up the mulligan stew of economics here a bit, and I'm not liking the way it's tasting. Every single day it just seems to get a little bit more toward the downturn. So if you were the president of the United States and you wanted to make a big splash and help things completely, I think the most logical thing you could do would be to grow government some more, wouldn't you, Adam?
Yeah, that would be my first response.
Because what this world really needs is a new federal department of, ready for this? Environmental justice. That happened this week. The announcement was made, we're going to have a Department of Environmental Justice. Now, the only thing that I'm missing so far is a definition of that. What do you suppose environmental justice means? And I have a concept, too. If they want to try to explain it to me, why don't you explain it by example, by getting your butts over to East Palestine and helping those people who have been economically devastated by the environmental problem brought on by the train wreck. So I'm trying to be constructive now and give the government a good idea of how to approach their new concept. How'd they do?
Yeah, something tells me that's going to be the strategy employed by this new department.
Yeah, it'll be the day. Whatever. You know, this whole thing is just, I guess, it started to irritate me more and more. All right, on a quick note, because we're almost out of time for this segment, not to be outdone by Brazil, Argentina lifted its central bank rate by 3 points. 3 points this week.
Wow.
Do you know what level?
I do not.
81%.
Wow.
Yeah. That barely changes 78%, in my humble opinion. But they're trying to keep up with their inflation rate, which is expected to grow to 104% in March. So, let's see. We have a leftist in Argentina, and we have a leftist in Brazil. The leftist has been in Argentina longer than the one in Brazil. So we've got a lot more data to grow or to go on here. So I'm kind of figuring that as goes Argentina, so will go Brazil. And if you got anything invested there right now, I'd probably bail. Maybe it's just me. All right, a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Adam is far away, but still sound pretty good. A couple of clicks here and there, but no biggie. So, good. I wanted to do a... Well, first off, I got to remind people the trivia question is still open. The SPY, the ETF that tracks the S&P 500, if you had only owned it every day since 1996, only owned it on days with big volume, what would your return have been cumulative to right now?
And by big volume, it's actually above
average.
Anything
yep.
above average.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, they did just a numeric average and nothing else. All right, to the phone. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I'm going to take a stab.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for recommending Creature from Jekyll Island.
That is my pleasure, believe me.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm trying to wrap my head around that. I'm on the Milton Friedman book now.
Good.
But I'll take a stab and say 65,000.
I'm going to give everybody a better than average hint. You're way too high.
Way too high. Okay.
So I'm kind of thinking maybe people will stab it a little lower in that case. So a little help can help. This was not meant to be an easy question, by the way. It's got a very serious moral to the story, but it's not because the question is easy.
Yeah. Okay.
If you get tired of reading all my money suggestions and you want to just read a really, really fun book, there's one called The Art of Racing in the Rain. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it is a great book, an absolutely great book. And the library has it. You can borrow it that way. You can do it electronic at the library or Kindle or anything you want. But The Art of Racing in the Rain, and if you're a dog lover, you'll know what I mean.
Okay.
So, how about that? I do have some other... I'll be talking more and more about other books that are in the financial realm, too. But I appreciate hearing back that somebody's following up on that.
Yeah, it took a little bit. I mean, I listened to it on Audible.
Oh, good.
And I'm glad that I did it. Yeah, because it's, over 600 pages. But,
yep.
It was a lot to wrap the head around. But, boy, it's out there. That creature is down in Brazil and Argentina right now.
No kidding. You should have seen when I was reading that for the first time. This goes back several years now. My wife would watch me read it. I guess we were sitting in the same room. And I'd get about 10 or 15 pages done at one sitting. And she could get scared, I guess, because she could see my blood pressure going up and it was turning red. It was just...
Well, very great suggestion. I really appreciate the show, you guys. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
A pleasure. Thank you. I appreciate the call. All right. Yeah, tell you, folks, there's one line in that book that if you read that, it's worth every minute that you spent reading the book because it's indisputable, and yet nobody ever thinks about it. So I'm a real big fan. I've read it cover to cover twice now, and as Craig said, it's really, really long. But in all fairness, a lot of it is cites and quotes and footnotes and references and all that, so it doesn't read quite as long as its overall thickness shows. But I love the idea of doing it on tape because it would be – first off, each session wouldn't be as long as it might be when you got reading it. And second, it might take a little of the sting out of it day to day. So thanks. I really appreciate people following up on some of these things. Oh, okay. Craig is on a different radio station. He sounded like a radio guy, didn't he? Okay. We talked about Argentina. I wanted I had one other little comment on this. Oh, and by the way, back to books. I probably mentioned this a week or two ago, but if you want to read another book that isn't, it isn't not financial, if I might do a lot, bunch of negatives, but it sort of isn't. It's called How Do You Kill 11 Million People? And I recommend that so highly. And unlike The Creature from Jekyll Island, it is very, very short and can be read in a single sitting, and it is well worth it. So, oh, yes, the follow-up in Argentina. This is what happens when great minds get great power. Or maybe it's the opposite of what happens that way. But the government now is they're combating inflation, and they obviously were big fans of Richard Nixon, because right now they're about to launch some wage and price controls. Now that will fix it, right?
Oh yeah, that works every time, right?
Yeah, and of course the IMF, who has already loaned them about $44 billion, they're going to throw in another 5.4, because what do you do when people are defaulting? Give them more money.
Well, clearly that'll solve the problem.
Absolutely. Tell you folks, there are days when you get into this stuff, you just can't believe it. Here's a goodie, too. I've got a couple little things that are fun here. Shell, the oil company, has been accused by a, quote, climate group that they're greenwashing their financials. You ever heard that before?
That's a first for me.
Well, it was for me, too. So they're claiming to be spending more money on renewables and climate projects and all that stuff than they actually are, according to a climate group called Global Witness. And I'd be curious to see where that goes. Just an observation, nothing real serious. Another one. Let's go back the other way. It is now official. The Trump tax cuts paid for themselves. And all you have to take into consideration is that Trump economy from the day of inauguration up to the day that they had to shut everything down due to COVID. And the tax cuts had already paid for themselves. And unlike what we heard again this week from the usual idiots, those tax cuts went to everybody, not just the wealthy. The average taxpayer saved about $2,400. Now, all we have to do is stay asleep as a public, and that's all going to go away, because starting January 1, 2026, the Trump tax cuts expire, and you will be paying a couple hundred extra bucks a month on top of the penalty, which is of similar size, that you're paying right now just for buying staples in a period of hyperinflation. So,
and I think that's worth talking about a little bit more with the Trump tax cuts. I really hate when politicians get up there and say, they just blatantly lie and say it only went to the rich. That is absolutely not true. If you say that, you don't understand how the tax code works, because what they did, it's very, very simple. They widened the brackets and lowered the rates. So it was a double win for every taxpayer who even paid if you paid a dollar, you paid less the following year if you had the same tax situation. And it's simple math. You can't, there's no argument that makes sense that says that it didn't lower taxes for lower income earners. The only way that argument makes sense is if someone was not in a bracket where they paid income tax, then they didn't get a rebate on top of already not paying taxes. So I really can't stand that argument. It makes no sense. It's not based in logic. And if you don't understand how the tax code works, then do a little research and educate yourself. And you will see when this thing expires that your taxes will go up. And I guarantee you will notice that side of the equation.
Me too. And furthermore, in case you're thinking this is a one-off or somebody made up the story or something like that, if you go back and check what happened when JFK cut tax rates and when Reagan cut tax rates and when Bush cut tax rates, if you go back every one of those times, revenue rose to a new record and those tax cuts paid for themselves. So in case you think that we're making it up or somebody else is making it up or hiding the truth, it's not true. This article came from Town Hall, if anybody's interested, and it's just called simply, it's official. Trump's tax cuts paid for themselves. You can easily search it online and find out the real truth, because you're not going to hear it out of D.C. anytime soon, and that's the truth. All right, we're coming up on another break, so I did want to make another mention that this is the anniversary of one of those days that you never forget. Earth Day in 1970, where were you? I know where Adam was. He hadn't been thought of just yet. But a lot of you that are in my age group were probably well aware of what was happening there. But if you were in a place like, what was that? A Vietnam, Tom was in Vietnam. You won't forget it either. Sucking up a little of that Agent Orange, were you? If you were in a place like Madison, Wisconsin, and a few others, you know, Haight-Ashbury, all the usual pockets of idiots back from the 60s, you will remember the big deal they made of it. And that was at a time when a guy named Paul Ehrlich was putting out his expectations. And they ranged from about half the people in the world dying of starvation to almost all the world dying of starvation. They'd probably freeze to death, according to some people, and then they'd cook, according to other people. But they were never going to be able to populate the earth because food would be in such a shortage condition that people would literally be starving to death by the millions. If you go back and read some of that stuff, and then you think of what these people are trying to do to us today, you realize that when generalizations like that are thrown around by a bunch of people who know nothing, they're not going to be right, plain and simple. So don't let them get to you. It doesn't work that way. All right, we only have a minute here, so I got a couple of quick ones, and I got some things to talk about after the break. Medicare, our government, for some reason, seems to be coming down hard on what we call Medicare Part C, which is the Medicare Advantage plans. And I do not understand this, and I'm hoping someone will help me explain it. For one thing, they're complaining about DeSantis trying to privatize Medicare. Well, Part C means a company takes over the responsibilities from Medicare, and then they have to deal with Medicare. But the big one is, if you call for information, they are trying to implement a 48-hour holding period before the company can call you back for information. I'll tell you right after the break why that is so horrible. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
It's not Adam Van Wee.
All right. I'm laughing at myself a little bit. This Medicare Advantage thing, I don't know how many of you out there have an Advantage plan, but if you have one, you're probably pretty happy with it. Now, there are things they can't do. For instance, if you had lived in a certain place and dealt with certain physicians or hospitals or whatever for a long time, and it comes time to do a Medicare sign-up, you might find that there is no Advantage plan that covers your doctors. That's the situation Sarah and I are in because we use Mayo Clinic. So instead of that, we just get a supplement. So we use Medicare and a supplement. No big deal. But the people who like their Advantage plans, some of them have even nothing out of pocket. I don't think that's true in Florida, but in some places like Texas, you can get monthly plans that don't involve any out of pocket. They just have a big deductible. But whatever form it takes, and there are lots of them, you have to go and do some shopping around to see what would work best for you personally. But what the imbeciles in Washington, D.C. are trying to do is impose a 48-hour waiting period from the time that you request information from a provider, no matter who it is, until they can even call you back. Well, what's the problem with that? Pretty simple. A lot of people start listening to people like Joe Namath touting these Medicare C plans or Advantage plans, and by the time they actually get around to doing something, it's in the last day or two of open enrollment. Well, if the federal government slaps a 48-hour waiting period on it and you're in day one or day two at the end of the open enrollment period, that means you aren't able to get any information and you're stuck where you are. Now, does that make sense to anyone that the government would work against having a privatized plan for Medicare? Maybe I'm just so adamant about the private sector that I'm not seeing it as straight as I should or as other people think I should. But this just seems so contradictory to common sense. But then again, it's Washington, D.C., right? Who knows?
That is correct.
Yeah.
I did want to bring up one thing. We are still taking reservations for the Joe Strong Golf Tournament. If you're not a regular listener, this is a cause that we support, and it is a friend of mine who started the foundation to benefit the St. Jude's Research Hospital when they lost their son to cancer a few years ago. It's going to be May 17th, I believe, at Queens Harbor. And there's about 20-something spots left for golf, and it's going to sell out. So if you're interested, go to joestrong.org, and we hope to see you out at Queens Harbor.
Nice. And Adam's in charge of the weather, so every year it's perfect on that day.
It has been, actually.
I know.
It's been great.
It's easy to take credit for the past now that it's over, but you've always been good. It's, let's face it, it's just a wonderful I don't know. Tom's sending me a message. Oh, you're gone. Adam's gone. That's all right. He'll come back. Let's make a premise here. Retirement isn't all it's cracked up to be, said almost no one ever. But as we discussed last week, all of a sudden, a bunch of people are deciding that they want to work a little longer. In fact, the fastest growing section of the working public is the 75 and older crowd, which is expected to grow by 2030, 96.5%. Why is all this happening? Well, there are a couple of reasons. If you you want to break people into a couple of general categories, you would call them the voluntary and the involuntary retirees. Involuntary can be for a number of reasons, and it could be because you had bad health, a company shut down, or any number of things. And for a long, long time, if you were over 60, you know and I know that you were just out of luck. You were not going to get a second chance at life because, believe it or not, there was actually age discrimination. Well, those days are changing. And all of a sudden, there are people out there who understand that older workers are good. Excuse me, I have to go to the phones. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
Well, nothing good in New York City. Thousands of retirees are picketing City Hall because the illustrious mayor thinks he's going to get $600 million in savings. They want to take 250,000 retirees out of original Medicare and their supplement and put them in an Aetna Medicare PPO.
Oh. Gee.
Not good.
No.
Yeah.
That's called the elimination of free choice, isn't it?
I would think so. So they went to court twice already. They're going to go to court one more time. It's a big deal. And because time is running short, perhaps I could spend a few minutes with you guys next week. What I did want to say, though, I did have one quick question. Steve, I'm about your age. I was born in September of 51.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're a child.
If I'm not mistaken, next year, not this year, but next year I'm due to pay the piper with the 457 and the 403B plan. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Okay, now do I have to take two payments, or can I just take the one for next year?
You can take one next year, or you can wait another year and take two.
Very good. And the last question, if I have it correct, the accumulated amount in the 457 and the 403B plan I would add them together. I would go to the IRS actuary table and take that figure of number of years remaining, and that's what I'm due annually, correct?
Yeah, I think in your case, because of the nature of the plans, you're going to have to take separate RMDs for each plan. You can't add them together and take them out of somewhere else. That's generally the case on those things. I'm not sure exactly why they're so strict about it, but as far as I know, that's it. Oh, we lost him. Well, Mike, I tell you, if you're listening now, I would check that out by next week just to be sure, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. And if you want to prepare and get into the show a little bit earlier, maybe 9:20 or 9:35 or something like that, or 10:20, I mean, and want to talk a little bit more about that Medicare thing, I would love to discuss the whole issue because it's been on my mind lately, obviously. And I just don't understand what the government is doing. And it seems to me that whatever they're doing has been rubbing off on Adams up in New York City. That guy, and I warned people about him, that guy's turning into an absolute tyrant. I just don't understand.
Mike may have dropped off, but I'm back.
So, oh, good.
Well, let's talk about the answer to that trivia question, because I think it's really interesting, and we're almost out of time.
Yep. All true. All right.
The
popular concept is if you could just pick the days with the highest volume, you'd make out like a bandito. So if you just pick the days with the low volume, you'd be up 36,438%. And if you held it all the way through, as we're forced to do because we can't predict these things, it was still up 557%. But if you took all the above-average volume days between 1996 and now on the SPY, your return would be a negative 98.2%, yielding for a $1,000 investment in 96 an account value today of
$180.
You got it.
No, I'm sorry. $18.
No, $1.80. That's I did the same thing you did.
No, I dropped
two zeros.
It's $18. It would be
Okay, from a $1,000 investment, right?
Yeah.
So if you were if you put in $100, you got $1.80 left because you lost 98.2. Now this is totally counterintuitive.
It is, and it violates the there's a lot of rules of thumb that make sense, but probably an equal amount that are built on